Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's coming to you from Cincinnati. We had a fabulous first day of the PFF Draft Show. I hope you all check that out on PFF.com. We are not done, though. We'll be back with rounds two and three on Friday, which I guess we're recording this on Friday, but you're listening to it on Friday, so it's all good. Also, Saturday and Sunday shows as well. As always, almost always, I am joined by PFF's own Andrew Erickson. Andrew, happy draft night. We did it, man. We got the round one.
Yes, we did. It was a blast. It was just finally great to just see some of these players laying with teams so we can start figuring things out, projecting things forward for the 2021 season. So I'm loving it, man. I'm all hyped up. I'm usually passed out at this time, but I'm all hyped up.
I took smelling salts before the draft started. I finished my Red Bull about 15 minutes ago, recording this at 12:30. I am ready to talk the draft, Andrew, particularly, again, I like to, you know, not go into my personal endeavors too much, but this one makes fun of me a little bit so we can get through it. So today, PFF Draft Show, we all got makeup on and all that, which is not something I'm regularly used to doing. Makeup lady, very kind, very helpful, tells me that, I have an awful lot of red on my cheeks and my lips. And she said that's from sunburn. And I said, you're right. I'm getting tanned this year. First time ever. She said, Ian, you are never going to get tanned. You are far too white. So Andrew, unfortunately, I've learned today, I'm not going to get tanned. But on a happier note, we have learned finally where all these guys are going to be going. Man, we have been basically trying different ways to break down this draft class for the better part of the last 2-3 months. And now we finally have it. Andrew, I want to start off with the quarterbacks. Five of them were selected. First overall, obviously Trevor Lawrence. We saw Zach Wilson go number two to the Jets. Trey Lance went number three of the 49ers, not Mac Jones, like Twitter was ready to have an uproar about. The Bears went ahead and traded up to 11 to get Justin Fields, and arguably the best and just most exciting pick of the entire draft, I'd say, so far. And finally, Mac Jones, the Patriots at pick 15. So Andrew, where would you rank these quarterbacks just in the fantasy format strictly for 2021?
So for me, I think that I really want to rank Trey Lance first. Honestly, I think that's my inclination. That was kind of my initial reaction to it, would be to rank him first, just based on the fact that if these guys are all starting the same amount of games, if we can assume that Trey Lance gets the start, then I think that he's the clear number one because of the rushing upside that he offers is the best out of the entire class. And then you're inserting him into the Shanahan offense, which has just produced fantasy gold for passers, yards per attempt since 2014. Jimmy Garoppolo and Nick Mullins are both top five. So I think that the Lance landing spot was the biggest mover for me in terms of, because that's what we didn't really know. We were all speculating. We kind of knew Trevor Lawrence. We knew Trevor Lawrence was going to be a Jaguar. So all of the projections that we had with him already were kind of in that in mind, but Trey Lance, it's a home run where he ended up. So if we get more information about the Garoppolo thing, if he gets traded, then I got no problem putting Lance as the number one quarterback.
That's the million-dollar question, because, again, we've seen seven rookie QB1s since 2010. Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, RG3, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray, most recently Justin Herbert. Herbert helped buck this trend, but the common trend between those first six guys were they all started in week one and they averaged at least 25 rushing yards per game in college. Lance is one of the most dual threat friendly quarterbacks we've seen come out in a long time. He's in that Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson mold. Not necessarily saying he's as good as those guys, particularly not Lamar, but he just has that run first mentality that is so fantasy friendly from the quarterback position. I mean, our own Mike Renner gave Trey Lance the comp in our PFF draft guide, you know, Taysom Hill with actual arm talent. And we all saw, as bad as Taysom Hill looked playing quarterback last year, how good he was when he actually got out there, just in terms of fantasy. People, you do not need to be a good real life quarterback to be a good fantasy quarterback. I'm not saying Lance can't be great, man. You said it. Best case landing spot for him and really any quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo leads the NFL in yards per attempt on passes thrown behind a line of scrimmage over the past 3 years. Like, that's what playing in a Kyle Shanahan offense can do for you. I'm with you. Trey Lance, the second he gets to start, he's going to be my QB1 but this class. But, man, I'm not sure that's guaranteed, because this is maybe the one quarterback that could have gone to San Fran where we should be a little bit concerned about how quickly they can beat out Jimmy G. This kind of goes with their, you know, I know Shanahan and Lynch weren't exactly being too open before the draft. They were keeping the pick close to the vest. Obviously, we had no idea what was going on, but they did say that they still see Jimmy G as part of the future. Ian Rapoport today came out and said there's not really, you know, much going for them in terms of trying to trade him the Patriots. I am concerned about how quickly Trey Lance get on the field. I could see it being more of like a Jalen Hurts situation where once he's out there, he's a QB one. I'm just not sure that's going to happen within the first month or two of the season. With that in mind, Andrew, I think we got to go Justin Fields ahead of Trevor Lawrence, though. I mean, it's just a situation where he is going to be starting. Trevor Lawrence, better real life prospect. But again, we just need to realize we're playing fantasy football, not real life football. And Fields just offers a higher rushing floor.
Agreed. I think that, and maybe people will be off of the landing spot. I know the Bears, they have a stigma about the team where it's like, oh, like the Bears, they're not good. And look, Justin Fields, would I have liked him to land with Carolina or Denver? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I would have loved him seen him with more weapons.
Big yes.
But he's still got at least Allen Robinson. So that's good. And, you know, Allen Robinson, man, here we go. Best quarterback he's ever played with in his entire career. And since he started playing football, kudos to him. Back to the wide receiver one status. Absolutely love it. But it's definitely close between Fields and Lawrence. But I think ultimately you're going to see more rushing from Fields, especially if there are receivers that aren't getting open. So He's going to have to take off and run.
They're both like borderline QB1s. I mean, it's going to be like how everyone, you know, was giving me crap for ranking Cam Akers over Jonathan Taylor, even though like one was RB10, one was RB11. Like, that's what I see happening here with Fields and Lawrence. I don't have a huge difference in opinion on them, but I do think Fields would be the guy to get the nod from me at this point in time. Remember, people, doing this after a hell of a lot of caffeine in the system, so take it with a slight grain of salt. We still do have three more months until drafts really start heating up. Man, Zach Wilson, so... I wrote articles on every single first round quarterback, running back, wide receiver drafted. So make sure you check those out on pff.com. Also, Andrew and the fantasy guys have a nice tracker going that will continue to be updated throughout rounds 2, 3 and beyond. So make sure you keep an eye on those for more coherent thoughts on the matter. But Zach Wilson, man, my big takeaway with him, I'm buying a little bit into the idea he could be a bust. I'm not writing them off yet. We've seen this. Daniel Jones, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, all these quarterbacks that have been labeled a bust before they take an NFL snap, we've seen them still be fine in fantasy. And I think that could be okay with Wilson, which is why I just think he and the Jets, man, they're like not the best in pretty much anything, but a great late round best ball stack. You don't need to even build your entire roster around the Jets because they're all so freaking cheap. We can get Corey Davis, Denzel Mims, you know, fingers crossed, Javonte Williams, if they end up taking a running back at some point in this draft, and Zach Wilson all in the later, you know, 10 plus rounds stretch. So Zach Wilson, you know, he's going to probably be outside of my top 20 QBs. I just don't, like, we've known he's going to the Jets for over a month and he's still sitting as the QB26 and underdog ADP. It's a situation, Andrew, where like, yeah, I'm not going to go out of my way to draft draft Wilson, but right now he's being priced at his floor.
Yeah, he's not expensive at all. And I think that's because people are smart and they realize that his profile does have a lot of bust potential on it. Look, if you're going to pick one of these five quarterbacks is the most likely to bust, and you're not even looking at, you know, who has the highest upside, or it's Wilson. Yeah. Like, and again, you could argue him versus Jones. Okay. Mac Jones probably is a safer floor. It's probably a safer projection because he's played a higher competition at the college level. But the thing with Wilson too, look, the guy never faced pressure at BYU. Like, he just never did. And the Jets, look, last year, the two most pressured quarterbacks were as follows: Joe Flacco and Sam Darnold, who both played for the New York Jets. Now, the Jets know that. That's why they traded up to draft one of the premier offensive linemen in this draft with Elijah Vera Tucker. So they're trying to patch the offensive line, which is smart of them. So again, will the Jets be the worst offensive line in the league next year? I don't know. Probably not. They're looking to make improvements, but again, he's going to be pressured more, which is just another red flag in his profile. And I think I just would rather chase the upside with any of these other rookie quarterbacks. Yeah. Again, Lance, if there's mystique around if he's starting or not, that's going to cause him to not necessarily rise up the boards. But look, man, I did this whole thing with Tyrod Taylor and friggin' Justin Herbert last year. And I was like, yeah, Tyrod Taylor is going to be the starter. Took 1 week, one lung puncture, and he was out. And Justin Herbert was in one rookie of the year. So, yeah, I'm just going to be all over Trey Lance.
Yeah. One of my favorite tweets from a night that was full of great tweets was from PFF's own Kent Wyrosh. Did I say that name wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you say it?
Wyrosh.
Oh, I got it right then. Come on, Andrew. Yeah. Give me some. Kent Wyrosh tweets, Zach Wilson looks like he threatens litigation after getting sacked. It's just really tickled me. And man, that is a pretty damn good one. So kudos to you, Kent. But yeah, look, among this group, Zach Wilson is fourth in rushing yards per game. He's not immobile by any stretch. Like, there is a, you know, 10 tiers of a drop off between him and Mac Jones, believe me. But he isn't someone that I think can hold up as physically if he's going to try to run a lot. And I just don't think that's really his mindset. Again, that's good. I don't think the Jets made a mistake necessarily taking him number two. If I was running the Jets, I would have gone Justin Fields, but I don't think, you know, they're in a different stratosphere. I understand the upside. I'm just not going to be taking major chances out of him in fantasy football. But like I said, man, anytime we can get players closer to their floor than ceiling, those are the types of values we should be attacking. Last thoughts on Mac Jones. I'm going to make the fantasy part of this real quick. Do not draft him, people. Think about the best case scenario we had for Mac Jones. That was going to the 49ers, immediately getting the job and just doing, you know, his best Jimmy G impersonation. Jimmy G was the QB 23 in fantasy points per game in 2019 when everything went right. 27 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, loaded skill position groups. If you don't run the football in fantasy at quarterback and you're not Aaron freaking Rodgers throwing for 40 plus touchdowns, you're pretty much useless. Mac Jones had 42 rushing yards in 30 career games at Alabama. I understand you lose rushing yards from taking sacks, but come on, man. Justin Fields went 44 yards against Michigan State, juking out three guys along the way. That was more yards than Mac Jones had his entire career. So, hey, Mac Jones might be fantastic. You know, maybe Bill Belichick got himself his next quarterback of the decade. I just cannot stress enough how out on him I am in fantasy football. Now, Andrew, quickly let me know if you agree. But as a resident New England Patriots fan of this podcast, let me know how you feel on Mac Jones. Because I will say, I mean, Mac Jones, number three, that was always insane to me. Mac Jones at pick 15, I can get behind that a little more.
He definitely went where he probably was supposed to go the entire time. Yeah, like going 15 was, you know, back when I had written an article about the Patriots, you know, fixing the offense, I referred back to it and I wrote about it and was like, hey, at 15, Mac Jones will probably be there. Like, he'll be an option for them to look for a replacement for Cam Newton. And this is what happened. Exactly what happened like that. Mac Jones at 15 for the New England Patriots. I think you explained it all with the rushing. He doesn't have it. Like, that's just not a thing. And for him to be a fantasy factor, he has to either throw a ton or become one of the league's most efficient passers. And just assuming a rookie that's going to do that as the fifth quarterback draft, it's just, there's those expectations are way too lofty, especially in his first season. Could he become that? Sure. But look, there are plenty of seasons where Tom Brady wasn't a barn burner in terms of fantasy football. Like, he was okay, but he was never, he had a couple, the pocket passers have those spike seasons, but it's not nearly as consistent as guys that offer the mobility. I mean, look at it. Aaron Rodgers last year, he was terrible in fantasy. And then he come back this year and he throws for a 40 plus touchdown. So yes, I agree with you out on Mac Jones. One thing I will say though about Mac Jones being the quarterback there is this injects life into the pass catching units for the Patriots, because less running from Cam Newton means more passing attempts. So like Nelson Aguilar, like I'm way more interested in now. The tight ends, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, you know, one of Jones' major strengths is as an underneath passer, super accurate, just accuracy in general. Like, that's the thing that Cam Newton didn't have last year, just missing throws left and right. That's not something Mac Jones is going to do. He's going to be able to throw the ball. And Damian Harris comes back from the dead because now he can score freaking touchdowns.
Oh, that's
like,
true.
Like, that guy had no shot last year because Cam Newton would score every single touchdown on the goal line. Not the case. And Damian Harris was PFF's third highest graded rusher last season. So he's someone that a lot of people have forgotten about, and rightfully so, because of Cam Newton being the quarterback. But with Mac Jones under center, again, we talk about the mobile quarterbacks and how they're bad for rushing and for running backs. Okay. Mac Jones, an e-mobile quarterback, that means running backs are going to be targeted in the passing game, which is something that we saw Tom Brady do a lot. So James White, Damian Harris, like Damian Harris is really sneaky right now, and I'm really intrigued by him.
Yeah, look, I am a massive Cam Newton stan, always have been. I don't think he starts in week one, unfortunately. I think he'll maybe put up a decent battle, but look, if they wanted to give Cam another chance, we would have seen a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance, or they would have been more of an effort to get a similar dual threat quarterback. Yeah. Look at who the Ravens backed up Lamar Jackson with, RG3. Like, you don't put completely different skill set quarterbacks in the system. The first round QB is going to be the guy to get to go there. Great point on Nelson Agholor. I'm still skeptical that tight ends can get it done. Again, we've only seen Ertz and Goddard in, I think, 2018, and then also Gronk and he who should not be named back earlier in the decade, both function as fantasy tight end ones in the same season. So history is against them. With that said, we haven't really seen two tight ends that good on the same team in quite a while. So at a minimum, we can get excited about the Patriots passing game again. And to your point, maybe even one of these running backs. We'll see if Sony Michel is completely out of the picture. But hey, man, if we can get Damian Harris as an early down guy and James White pass down, that's fine. We don't have Cam Newton taking, you know, 20 goal line carries anymore. So arrow certainly pointing up for Damian Harris. Moving on. So Jamar Chase went number 5 to the Bengals. I was happy to catch his, I think his over under was like 5.5. The second I saw him rocking those Bengals shoes, man, I threw down like 5 units on that. And I was like, man, pretty ill-advised decision there, Ian, but it happened to work out in this Chase pun absolutely intended. Andrew, where would you rank Jamar Chase around, and why is it kind of in that wide receiver 25 to 30 range?
Because T. Higgins was my wide receiver 26, and I put him ahead of T. Higgins, so he's at wide receiver 25. Because that's the thing. If I'm going to rank these guys, I'm going to rank Chase first. I'm going to rank him over Higgins. I'm going to rank him over Boyd. And their target shares are probably going to be pretty flat across the board. That's kind of how it was last year with A.J. Green, Tyler Boyd, and T. Higgins. And that's kind of how we should view it. But because there are so many of them, it's going to probably make them all pretty decent values when it comes down to it, because none of them are going to stand out in a projection as, oh, well, he's clearly going to be the guy. But I don't know if we really need the guy, because this offense is going to throw so damn much with the Bengals next year. So I just want to leave a draft with a Bengals receiver. And I guess I don't really care who it is. I guess I would probably prefer, I think Boyd's probably the safest because his role is probably not going to change that much. Higgins' ceiling maybe is limited now more with Jamar Chase, and obviously Chase is the ultimate upside play because of he's a freak, and the connection with Burrow is already built in.
Almost like a discount version of the Cowboys. I mean, I know Burrow's not going to be as efficient as Dak, but truly, he was number one in the NFL in dropbacks last year. That Bengals defense, even if they make some strides, they're not going to be anything resembling average. I would find that hard to believe. So we're just going to have a situation where, yes, we could have three fantasy-relevant wide receivers. I understand CJ Uzomah was doing his thing early on, but no, when you add freaking Burrow's, probably still BFF. We knew he was his BFF in 2019 to the equation. I am with you. He should be the number one wide receiver with the Bengals. We were talking, I think it was last week, we were doing, you know, some series on, you know, what veterans could really be impacted negatively from this. And yeah, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, not great, man. They're still good values, and I hope their ADP sinks down and we can get them, you know, in that range. But right now, guys, if you're doing these best balls and underdog and stuff, you're going to see some inflation from guys like that. So Chase, you know, he was the one kind of rookie wide receiver that I wasn't landing much before the draft because he was already being priced pretty much here. Here he is now. It's legit, and I think it's a reasonable position. So Jamar Chase wasn't someone I was willing to chase because I wasn't positive he would go to the Bengals. Now, obviously, Sewell was a decent chance to land there as well. But right now, I do think he deserves to be high-end wide receiver 3 at worst. Andrew, before Chase went, we had Kyle Pitts go to the Falcons at number 4. We have talked about him at length. I think we agreed that he is our tight end 6 entering next year, just ahead of Dallas Goedert for however long Zach Ertz remains on the roster, which, you know, if that trade will ever freaking happen, come on, man. But I guess the question here with Kyle Pitts, Andrew, do we even care if Julio leaves? That's been floated out there. First of all, just quick tangent. I do not call the Julio contract horrible. There is a national NFL reporter who should not, I won't name, but like, you can't call a great player's contract horrible. You're paying the guy a lot of money to be a great player. And Julio Jones has been an exceptional player his entire career. I know he was banged up last year, but just a little bit careful, more careful wording there would be great. Not a team friendly deal is fine, but it's not a horrible contract. Julio Jones is a great player. He earned that contract. So with that off my chest, Andrew, like, let's say Julio leaves. Would you really be bumping Kyle Pitts up that much?
I think that I would put him probably ahead of Mark Andrews. I think that's probably where I think Hockenson right now, dude, like Hockenson is elite tight end.
All the targets.
Like, because they didn't take another receiver. So now if they draft one in the second round, okay, it's a less talented guy. I mean, Hockenson should, I'm going to have so much TJ Hockenson this year. It's going to be a mess. And that's the thing. If Pitts is going ahead of Hockenson, like, I'll probably be out, because Hockenson is so locked in to so much volume in that offense, and it's his third year. So this is like the typical tight end. This is the year that we see him take that step. And TJ Hockenson's like, look, Kyle Pitts is a freak, but like, TJ Hockenson was also top 10 pick too. So I'm really excited about him. But I think Pitts, yeah, over Dallas Goedert, they just added another pass catcher. So they added more competition another receiver. And look, Jalen Hurts, there's not a lot of passing volume in that offense. And the same thing can be said for the Ravens. They just added another pass catcher as well. Not a lot of passing volume. You need targets. Like, it's so important. And Kyle Pitts, yes, he's competing for targets with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, but I know that the offense is going to throw a lot. And then I think that if Julio's gone, then I think it's an easy way to just lock him into the top five.
Hayden Hurst might be the only starting tight end in the league where Pitts might be the best blocker at the position right now. And I'm not saying Pitts is even awful at that part of the game. The guy's that good of a receiver. Why should Florida leave him in the block? I mean, it'd be irresponsible by them to have done that. And he's also, I believe, still 21. So, I mean, he certainly has a long way to go there. Look, they drafted this guy number 4 freaking overall. First non-QB selected. He's going to be out there early and often. I'm excited to see what Kyle Pitts can do at the NFL level. You hinted at this, Andrew. We got a bunch of first-round receivers that I'm just not really excited about, man. Devontae Smith went number 10, the Giants, ruining my over 11.5 proclamation. Jalen Waddle went number 6, the Dolphins. Kadarius Toney went number 20. Rashad Bateman went 27 to the Ravens. So, man, Andrew, I just feel like every single one of these situations, it's a crowded offense, and it just doesn't have all that much upside. Excuse me, Tony on the New York Giants. I think I messed up. Devontae Smith went to the Philadelphia Eagles. Sorry, everyone. 12:51 in the morning. I'm trying. My point, all these offenses, I mean, you just look at the quarterbacks, Tua, Hurts, Daniel Jones, Lamar Jackson. I don't think any of them are bad, but at the same time, we don't have any evidence of these quarterbacks enabling multiple fantasy relevant wide receivers, not even like to say one high end receiver. I mean, we haven't even really seen that out of them. We got Devontae in an Eagles offense that is pretty wide open. And if we had to just stack these receivers up and say who should get the most targets, I would lean towards Devontae Smith, but you know, just not overly sold on Hurts. I guess I would rank Devontae the first out of these guys, just because to me, the Giants, the Dolphins, and the Ravens have far more competition in their wide receiver rooms. I mean, the Tony pick in particular is just, you know, puzzling to me. I wonder if he's going to be almost more of a gadget guy, which, hey, you shouldn't be drafting gadgets in the first round. Not even necessarily because I don't think he can start, but Sterling Shepard, Kenny Galladay, and Darius Slayton, I mean, those aren't, you know, your just typical trash incumbent receivers to be trying to overcome. Same thing with Bateman with Hollywood and Watkins in a run first offense. And Waddle, you're looking at a situation with Parker and Fuller and him. So Andrew, man, any of these guys stick out? Because right now, like, if they fall to me and they're there at value, I'm fine, but I just don't see myself really chasing any of these guys.
So I'll start with the most egregious pick, and that was definitely Kadarius Toney. When that pick happened, I just like threw up my mouth. I was like, dude, this is awful. But look, somebody had to take a risk on Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney was the first round receiver that I was least excited about. He just has a ton of red flags on his profile, from his production to his late breakout. So to see him go to basically the worst landing spot, I would argue, just kind of makes it really easy for me to be like, no Kadarius Toney for me this year. I think you should be totally out on Kadarius Toney. It doesn't make any sense to chase him whatsoever. Again, like you mentioned, like gadget receiver, like, yeah, like that's exactly the thing. And now he's playing, but I mean, what is he going to be, like the fourth option on the team? So that makes no sense to go after a guy like Kadarius Toney. Again, it's good for Daniel Jones and, you know, add another weapon, but I would have much preferred, I think I was doing a live show when the pick happened. I was like, yeah, Giants on their clock. They got to go with Christian Darrisaw right here. Like, get a tackle, get some offensive line help. And then they draft friggin' Kadarius Toney gadget, the complete opposite of a hog molly. Like, what are you doing?
Look, we just talked about the Falcons and the Bengals. Some offenses can enable multiple fantasy relevant wide receivers. The reigning 31st ranked scoring offense with Daniel Jones, who threw 12 touchdowns last year, with Jason Garrett coming back, I have no confidence in them getting Tony going. Bateman, same thing, man. And not even against him. Like, I know he's been, you know, one of the more popular kind of non-top one, two or three receivers in this draft, but man, just anyone to the Ravens, it's just going to be really tough for him to see the sort of volume he needs. He might be better than Marquise Brown and Sammy Watkins at this point, but we've never seen Lamar really enable a high-end receiver. Marquise Brown a little bit last year. I just think in any situation where you're looking at, you know, a best case target total of what, like 80 or 90, even that's probably stretching it, probably going to be fading that. Are you with me? Devontae over Waddle, not as a player, but just as in terms of a fantasy producer this year?
I think it's close. I actually think it's really close because I think that Devontae is going to probably be more of a PPR guy. So someone that gets a lot of receptions, because again, I don't know how much competition there really is going to be in that offense. Obviously Jalen Reagor is there from the first round last season. So I like that. And again, we like Hurts a lot, but Hurts did struggle as a passer last year. And then Waddle's really interesting because the receiving room is crowded in Miami, but I guess I don't know like how good it really is. Like Devontae Parker wasn't really as good as he was the year before. He was much better with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Will Fuller's obviously a beast, but we'll see what his role is with Tua. And, you know, Tua has established rapport with Jalen Waddle. I think it's kind of close between Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith. You know, Waddle might have more spike weeks just because that really fits his game more. And I mean, I liked Waddle more going into the draft anyway. So if it's a tie, I'm still probably going to lean towards Waddle. And then with the Ravens thing, I guess the thing with Rashad Bateman is Lamar Jackson has never really had a receiver like him before. So I guess that's one thing that kind of works in his favor. When I look at all these receivers, the only one that's attached to a passer that's been above efficient before is been Lamar Jackson. So that's at least one thing that we know that, okay, if it's going to be limited volume, we know that at least Lamar Jackson has shown in the past that he can be an above average efficient passer, which would benefit a guy like Rashad Bateman, who Lamar Jackson really hasn't had. You know, Marquise Brown's been the speedster, Mark Andrews has been the tight end, but he's never really had a true alpha, which could kind of be like Rashad Bateman. So okay. I think that the consensus is going to be like, oh, well, Rashad Bateman, like he's going to suck, whatever. And if it's enough of a dip, I'll probably be interested in buying it.
That's fair. As always, we hate ADPs. We do not hate players. And it's a good point with Lamar. I mean, that is the other side of the coin with these guys. Like this, every single one of these wide receivers, even if I don't love their landing spots, because now it's more crowded in fantasy land, like it's objectively better for each of these quarterbacks. I mean, you know, we've had plenty of laughs already about Jalen Hurts being this year's, you know, late round QB. That's actually a middle round QB. That stands. Got him, you know, a former college weapon, former college teammate from back in the day. That's fantastic. Waddle, I mean, Tua, he's looking like a legit late round second caller. I mean, I saw someone tweet out the receivers like he was dealing with in week 15 last year. It was a complete joke, everybody. Like even Devontae Parker, I know he wasn't as good last year, but he was playing through the pain for a lot of that as well. Daniel Jones, like I know I just kind of crapped on him like 5 minutes ago, but I mean, I remember before this year, like ESPN's Matthew Berry was saying Daniel Jones was his, you know, guy. And I know it didn't work out. We've all had plenty of picks that don't work out. His reasoning behind it was simple. I mean, in 2019, only Lamar Jackson had more 30-point fantasy games than Daniel Jones. Now, we did not see that same sort of ceiling last year. We just saw him demonstrate some pretty good rushing floor. But man, if we can get anywhere close to that ceiling again, combined with that newfound rushing floor, we'll be looking at that sort of, you know, late QB2 that we should be attacking in fantasy land, and adding, you know, a guy like Tony that, okay, can at least maybe, you know, make those pop passes worth more than, you know, what old man Golden Tate was doing last year. Plus Kenny Golladay. I do think it makes sense if Daniel Jones takes a step forward. You know, we'll see how the ADP shake out. I'm not going to tell you to actively be going for DJ, but
you got to go for D. I'm telling people to go for DJ.
Wow. Over Tua? DJ or Tua?
Oh man, I like them both as late round guys.
They're,
I guess,
two good late round QBs. Yeah.
I guess I'll go with Daniel Jones. I think that the Giants defense isn't as good as the Dolphins.
That's a good call. Okay. Yeah.
More shootouts. And Daniel Jones has that D-gaff. He has that D-gaff to him a little bit. So
that's true. I forgot about the defense. That's a good call, Andrew. All right. Last main draft point. We had Travis Etienne go number 25 to Jaguars. Najee Harris go number 24 to the Steelers. So interesting quotes from Urban Meyer, to say the least. We'll be starting with Etienne. Basically saying they have a 1-2 punch with James Robinson and Carlos Hyde, and Etienne is going to be their third down back. Andrew, I think we just heard Urban Meyer's first coach speak. I am excited to potentially get a discount on Etienne. Not going crazy, but I think right now, man, he deserves to be in that low end RB2 range. You know, I've been pounding the table for Raheem Mostert throughout this offseason, but I would take Etienne over Mostert because he's going to catch passes, people. And as we've explained in this podcast, like, no, it doesn't make sense. You're awarded a full point in PPR settings for catching a pass. That's the game we play. So Etienne, even if he's not going to get the potential 300 plus touches that Najee Harris is going to get, like if he gets that sort of Alvin Kamara role where it's like 150, even, you know, Austin Eckler-esque role, 150, 175 carries with the 60 to 80 targets, man, we could be talking. And Etienne, you know, I've talked on this podcast about him not looking as explosive his last season, but with that said, he really did show out more as a receiver. I mean, as I was, you know, really studying his film a little bit more yesterday, dude was lining up, you know, on the outside, running double moves against Boston College, looking smooth as hell doing it, and getting to play with his former collegiate QB, man. It's not the Jets, it's not the Steelers, it's not the Falcons, but, you know, the Jaguars and Dolphins, and I'd say 49ers were kind of like that second tier of teams for an RB to go. How are you feeling about Etienne and the Jaguars?
So I like the discount too. I think that he's going to get the high value touches. Like that's what really matters. If you're not going to see 300 touches altogether and just get like everything, then at least I need to know, are you getting the targets? Are you getting carries near the goal line? And you just hit on the targets thing. And something that I remember from looking at the college information for Etienne was, so since 2018, he has 49 carries inside the 5-yard line, which is the most, more than Najee Harris, which only has, who has 41. Mm-hmm. So again, people are going to, because of the Kamara comp, they're going to be like, yeah, well, he's probably not going to be the goal line back. They're going to give it to James Robinson. And then the whole size thing doesn't even really make any sense, because just because you're bigger doesn't mean that you should, oh yeah, well, you're bigger, so we should just run you into other bigger guys, because that makes, you know, perfect sense. It doesn't. But no, Etienne has been a guy that's been effective at the goal line. So yes, James Robinson could really be the guy that they just use kind of in between the 20s, you know, grinding things out. And it's going to be Etienne. It's going to catch the pass out of the backfield. He's going to get the goal line touch. I mean, Alvin Kamara gets a lot of goal time. I mean, Alvin Kamara scored 6 touchdowns in a game. Like, that's the ceiling for an Etienne type of player. So, yeah, I totally agree. People are going to obsess over the he needs to get all the touches, but that's really not his skill set. He's never been a guy that's going to be, oh, we're going to give him 25 carries a game. He only had, since 2018, I think he only has one game with 20 carries. So I think that it's totally fine. I'll take the discount on him. And yeah, James Robinson, man, pour one out.
Yeah, I would pour one out. Unfortunately, I'm recording this from our lovely CEO's office here in Cincy. So I'm going to respect his lovely carpet we got working with here. But yeah, man, I mean, you know, James RB1's son has lived long enough to become James RB3's son. You hate to see it. Again, we've always liked James Robinson, but it was just always a stretch to believe that a brand new coach, you know, brand new, really just theme coming with this team as a whole was going to continue to give him that role that produced more touches than anyone other than Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry by the time he got hurt. And that is now where we're left at. So, and the surprising news, man, like Carlos Hyde apparently is also factoring into this equation. It might be muddled to start, but you know, that's how a lot of these running back rooms are. Look at Cam Akers, look at Jonathan Taylor last year. Like it was not pretty until it really was. And that usually coincides with when the fantasy football playoffs are starting to come around. With that said, man, I think Najee Harris is the one where we're going to be looking at the week one snap rate going, my goodness, we had this guy ranked too low. I already have him as my RB16. I think that's low, man. And I see the people complaining, oh, how's anyone going to get anything done behind that Steelers offensive line? They're going to be fine, people. We act like that the running backs on Pittsburgh averaged like 2 yards per carry last year. Old man, ageist, you know, the oldest 25, 26-year-old on the planet, James Conner, averaged 4.3 yards per carry last year. No, that's not a great stat for summing up a running back's ability. We understand that, but he still did it. I know the offensive line was ranked 31st in run blocking grade. It just doesn't matter if we're looking at a running back that could see upwards of 400 touches. Mike Tomlin has gone on the record saying he's a featured runner type guy. Has he just said that? No, he's done that. From 2014 to 2018, Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams, James Conner, Jalen Samuels, even Stephon Ridley's corpse in a couple of weeks, 17 games, all saw at least 17 touches per start. The last 2 years, there's been a funky committee system, mostly because Conner hasn't been able to consistently stay healthy. So for me, Harris was drafted to be a three-down workhorse, and we are functioning in today's NFL, which has so few three-down workhorses that, Andrew, man, like, as I'm, you know, I'm trying to talk, but I can't change my ranks at the same time. I feel like by the end of this process, man, Harris is going to be knocking on that RB1 door.
I agree, man. And look, we totally over-evaluate our projections of offensive line play. Like, we think that, oh, well, you know, this offensive line was so bad last year that they're going to be just this bad this year. Well, there's a whole new offensive coordinator in. Like, you don't know what they're going to do. We don't know who they're going to draft. There are a ton of tackles still left on the board going into the second round. Like, a lot of quality talent. Tevin Jenkins is probably the top tackle for me, and he's still available on the board. So there's room for improvement, and things tend to regress. Like, just because your last 1 year doesn't mean you're going to be, if they just return to be an average offensive line, like, that's going to be a significant difference. And the other thing too, look, the guy catches passes. Like, Le'Veon Bell, that's why he was so good in his peak with the Steelers, is because he was used so often in the passing game. Big Ben, okay, look, he doesn't want to get hit, man. He wants to get rid of the ball fast. How do you get rid of the ball fast? Throw it to your running back. Boom. Najee Harris. So you said you had him ranked 16, right?
Yep.
Do you have, so who are some of the guys around him, kind of, so people can get perspective?
Yeah. So right now, we're Harris, RB 16. I have him behind Antonio Gibson, DeAndre Swift, Joe Mixon, Chris Carson. I have him ahead of Miles Sanders, James Robinson, who's going to get a major bump here in the morning. J.K. Dobbins, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, someone I feel like I should probably move up a little
bit. No, he's like right next. So, like, I'm looking at mine too.
I think that's the good conversation. Him versus.
He's like right next to Edwards-Helaire for me. I have Edwards-Helaire 15 and Najee Harris 16. I'm not sure that's correct.
I think that's fair. Yeah, we'll see. And I mean, if, you know, I'm still in on Chris Carson. I just think the volume is there. If we see Javonte Williams or one of these day two running backs go there, he would be a big faller as well. So as things stand, Najee Harris, again, people, upside RB2, and we're going to be pounding that drum more and more. Just realize, though, like, look, the only worst run blocking graded offensive line last year was Los Angeles Chargers. Are we worried about Austin Ekeler? No, because he catches passes. Same idea with Najee Harris. I mean, no, could not stop reading good things about his receiving ability in the PFF draft guide. And definitely saw that, you know, on film as well. I mean, just making, like, back shoulder, you know, catches against LSU and stuff. I mean, this dude's body control is truly ridiculous with the ball in the air. A couple non-draft topics before we get out of here, everybody. Aaron Rodgers, reportedly close to a deal with the Broncos. This whole situation, man. First of all, Schefter and these guys start talking about it at like 4 or 5 p.m. Like, everyone's saying it's been going on for weeks, which means that they just waited to bring this story up right before the draft and, you know, just start making a big deal out of it. Immediately reports then come back saying, no, they're not talking right now. They're focusing on the draft, which, yeah, makes sense. But, Andrew, my goodness, man, I knew it wasn't paradise between Rodgers and Green Bay, but I didn't know we were at trade me right fucking now stage of things. So are you buying him going to Denver? And if so, like, Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, all systems go, like, high-end wide receiver twos. We're going to have to completely reconfigure our freaking rankings if this happens. I mean, we remember when Peyton went to the Broncos. This is not far removed from that same exact equation.
Aaron Rodgers to the Denver Broncos for 500, please. I mean, that's got to be the answer, man. That's got to be the answer. Dude, I wrote about how I thought that Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton could be, like, the next dynamic duo if Justin Fields ended up there, and if Aaron Rodgers ended up there, it's like, lock it in, man. We're gonna, dude, that would just be absolutely, like, Noah Fant would probably rank higher for, like, I don't know where Noah Fant would go in the ranking. CB top five tight end. I mean, Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton would be borderline. I think they'd have to be top 15 guys, both of them, even though neither of them have really done wide receiver one season altogether. Just the touchdown equity would be so there. It's like, you talked about how unlucky they were last year, those receivers, and you just put Aaron Rodgers in. It's like, poof. All right. Well, all the unlucky stuff's gone. It's all luck now.
You know, I wasn't, like, we were doing the draft show and everyone had to write in our whiteboard, you know, who we thought Aaron Rodgers would end up with. And I was the only one just had the Packers. I'm like, you have Aaron Rodgers. How could you even consider trading this guy? Like, get these Jordan Love reports out of here. It's Aaron freaking Rodgers. But when the Broncos seriously went Surtain at number 9 and didn't take Fields, didn't take Jones, where there's smoke, there's fire, young Andrew. So I don't know, man. It's one of these things where it's an awful awful lot of smoke from some seriously respected reporters. Does seem like he could be nearing that spot with the Broncos. So
he's only one. It's only Davante Adams only has 1 year left on his contract. So just one more year for, all right, well, they'll trade Davante to Denver too, you know, after a couple of weeks, cause he's a free agent.
You know, Aaron Jones keeps scoring touchdowns when he's playing number one scoring offense with Aaron Rodgers. Life might not be quite as pretty. Otherwise this would of course also be a tragic end to the Drew Lock era before it even got a chance to go, but I will not bore you all with that heartbreak that I'm dealing with. And Auden Tate got his job taken and Duke Johnson's still a free agent, man. Only Cordarrelle Patterson, Atlanta Falcons RB2 is still holding up the hardest brand. Final point, Andrew. Could it be a 4RB-esque situation in Jacksonville? Because Tim freaking Tebow has apparently decided that he is going to try to play football and be a tight end. I always kind of laughed. I know I didn't have a big enough stage, I guess, when Tebow was kind of coming up through the league. But I remember sending off like some mean tweets back in the day being like, imagine if another quarterback like was asked to play a different position and was just like, no. I don't care. I don't care if this has helped the team. I don't care if this has helped my career. I want to play quarterback. You know, Tebow, obviously, he's not a selfish guy. He's a very good human. But it is funny, you know, just how every single thing this guy has done over the years has been portrayed in the media. And now we have people calling for a Taysom Hill-esque role in Jacksonville. Andrew, does Tim Tebow play a snap for the Jaguars in 2021, or is this just a bunch of hoopla?
I mean, I hope he plays in the preseason. Get some preseason DFS action with Tim Tebow. I know he played in the preseason with the Patriots for a hot second. So, I mean, it seems like they're going to try it. Urban Meyer, they have the connection there. But, I mean,
it's the same thing with Carlos Hyde, man. Any other team, if you said Tim Tebow is going to tight end for any other team other than Urban freaking Meyer's team, would be the easiest fade ever. But no, now we have to actually discuss this.
I mean, look, man, they're tight. We talked about this. Their tight end room is pretty thin.
Oh, my God. All right, everyone. We're going to end on that note. It's officially 1:10 a.m. We're talking about Tim Tebow being the Jaguars starting tight end. Thank you, as always, for listening to the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Andrew and I will be back tomorrow night. Things will get real funky then. I'm getting my second COVID shot tomorrow afternoon. So Andrew might just have to finish off that episode when I, you know, pass out halfway through. But we'll worry about that at a different time. Andrew, PFF Draft Tracker and, you know, what's going on?
PFF Draft Tracker also released Fantasy Fallout, kind of just breaking down all of the picks that were gone in round one. All the positions hit on some offensive linemen just to kind of refer to, hey, this is good or bad. And then just mention the defensive players because, I mean, it's not great. We don't want anyone to draft defense. We do all offense, but just hitting on everything.
And seriously, people, PFF.com for the draft show. I don't hate Kings of Leon, but when I watch the NFL draft, I kind of want to hear football talk. That's what you're getting over here at PFF.com. And, you know, Andrew and I are biased, but I happen to think we do a pretty good job keeping things loose, keeping things fun, and always informed. He's Andrew Erickson. I'm Ian Hardis. This has been the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And until next time, take care, everybody.